Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show. I'm Jerome Osentowski, and our special guests are Cole Sullivan and Shannon Bump from Virginia. Cole, you want to talk a little bit about what your family farm is and what you do there, and tell us a little bit about the history of the region where you're at on the Chesapeake Bay?
Yeah, hey, Jerome. I can definitely do that. Well, Shanna and I are currently living on my parents' farm. It's in the Tidewater region of Virginia, so that's right near the Chesapeake Bay. We actually live in Wake, which is a very small part of the map, right outside of Deltaville, which is one of the most prominent free ports on the East Coast, actually. So a lot of people come in from other countries through the Chesapeake Bay and stay there. So, but our farm is a goat farm, and we do goat cheeses, and we try to practice as many permaculture methods and things like that as we can on the farm.
And some of the reasons you're here today is that you actually let your goats dry up for the season, and then you breed them, and then that gives you a little break, and you can get away from. Mm-hmm. This is the second time you've been out to Colorado, and the second time you've been at Crimpy,
mm-hmm.
sort of a working vacation for you, and so that's really a kind of a natural process too, is letting things chill out for the winter and letting your goats do a natural process, so
definitely.
They're not stressed out. And everybody gets a little break, right?
Yeah, I think Shanna could speak on that. She's actually the one doing most of the goat work. I'm more a cheese person.
Okay.
Hey, this is Shanna. I'm currently the herd manager at Sullivan's Pond Farm. We spend a lot of time making sure our goats are happy and healthy. And when they're happy and healthy, we're happy and healthy. Definitely giving them a break from milking for the winter season, so they can focus on making babies, and we can focus on catching up with our lives is great.
How many goats do you have?
Right now, the number is a little bit fluctuating, but right now I think we have about 26. We are in the process of selling some breeders that we had because we want to bring in some new genetics. We actually, this past fall, picked up a polled alpine. Polled is a goat that's been bred to have no horns. So we are hoping this kidding season to have at least 50% kids with no horns, which would be great.
And that's a little bit less hassle, so that's one less thing you have to do in terms of management. And
yes.
If you're on a dairy farm with goats, a lot of the time, I think cows too, they burn their horns, and that's just a very common practice that we're super sensitive to the emotions of our goats. And I think maybe there are people who would say that animals don't have emotions. I completely disagree, especially when you try to burn a baby goat's horns. It's really terrible. We want to do everything we can to keep that as ethical as possible and as painless as possible.
Well, tell us a little bit about the breed that you've come up with, crossbreeding, and for a smaller goat, and also for richer milk and for cheese making and stuff. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So Cole's parents, Rona and Tim, they have been working really hard over the past years to develop a hybrid mix of goats. Our goats are typically mixed with Saanen, La Mancha, Alpine, Toggenburg, Nigerian Dwarf, Nubian, and all of that interbreeding leads to what we're hoping to achieve, and what Cole's parents have achieved, is a smaller goat that produces still a good amount of milk, but is easier to manage. And it's also
healthier.
It's also breeding out some of the problems that goats have had since they've been overbred. Like Saanens typically have a lot of hoof problems, but we are now breeding that out of our herd. So we're just trying to come up with a more manageable size herd. Also, we are in the Tidewater region, so we're not in the mountains,
not at all.
The native, environment for goats. So they don't have mountains to climb and to wear their hooves down. So we have to trim their hooves. So this is all a process of making it easier for the humans, making it easier for the goats, so we can work in a symbiotic relationship together.
And you have some browse for the goats as well. You do some cut and carry, different stuff that's growing around, and so they're not only getting grasses, but they're getting some. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we've done a lot of research. I mean, my mom and my father have really spent so much more time getting this whole thing going. So they did tons of research about alternative ways to feed your goats, alternative ways to take care of them medicinally, but they actually overlap, which is really interesting. If you can browse for your goats, which is what they would do in nature, we tend to pick magnolia branches, we pick pine branches, oak, sassafras. There's all kinds of wild things growing all around us that we can harvest for free, and that actually harvesting them makes them grow more. So we're benefiting ourselves in that way, not having to spend as much. We do get local grain, but we pick as often as we can for them, and they seem, like I said, the overlap between medicine as food and food as medicine is obvious when you're doing this for your animals.
And the diet of the goats is very important because it keeps them healthy, but it also affects the flavor of the cheese.
Definitely.
So they have access to pasture year-round. They also have access to the woods because, unlike most people think goats and sheep are very similar, but goats are actually more like deer. They're browsers, they're foragers. They like to go around and root in the woods. So they get the woods, the pasture, and the prunings. All of that makes them very happy, and it makes the milk taste better.
High butter fat.
And some of the other things, Cole, you mentioned that you do is mixing herbs and wrapping your cheeses with different things to enhance the flavor and to add different flavors to the cheese. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's some of the most fun stuff that I get to do on the farm we do some cheeses that we do a bunch of different rinds. So traditionally in Europe and in France, they would bury their cheeses over winter and stuff like that in charcoal. So we take things, concepts like this and have integrated them into our process. So we make charcoal on the farm from grapevines and herb stems, and we cover one of our cheeses in that, and that's called La Chèvrière Sande, which is the goat lady's ash. So then we also do a wine must rind from a local winery. We get the wine must and we dehydrate it, and I blend it up and roll the cheeses in that. We grow Egyptian walking onions, which are these lovely perennial onions that we've discovered that just take over if you plant them, and they grow these crazy sets of onion bulbs on top. So they're really fun to grow. They're perennial food, and we can just keep harvesting from them and putting them on our cheese. But yeah, we do. My mom has come up with amazing, amazing other things I can continue to explain to you if you'd like. I mean, she does. We also coat cheeses in beeswax. We're always looking for alternative methods of wrapping our cheeses. We really don't like plastic, and we've been working for over, 15 years to try to develop alternative methods. So we wrap stuff in wine-soaked fig leaves, corn whiskey-soaked corn husks. We're developing cloth that's soaked in beeswax as an alternative to like plastic wrap. So we do everything we can, and really I don't think anybody who buys our cheese ever gets something wrapped in plastic. So that's something we can feel really good about, at least.
And the fig leaves, how does that affect the flavor of the cheese?
Shanna loves particularly the blue one. I shouldn't speak for her, but we both eat one of our favorites is the Chesapeake Blue. It's a blue goat cheese that is made with aged and fresh cheese that we blend, and then we wrap that in a wine-soaked fig leaf. And that cheese, the fig leaf, gives it this really lovely, almost spicy note on the outside, just like lightly from the leaf flavor, and then also kind of like a fruitiness too. It's lovely, and the wine soaked into it. Just, I don't know. It's so many layers, and it's not too pungent or funky. My mom's not a big blue fan, so.
Talk a little bit about you do some processed pasteurized cheese and some whole cheese.
Raw milk cheese,
Raw milk cheese, yeah.
Well, the Bonnie Clabber method that my mother developed, she kind of ripped it from time, it was lost in the Appalachian Mountains. There were people making cheeses, and she theorized that farmers who would have come from many different cultures and countries would have still brought their traditions and eaten cheeses in the mountains, for example. We're from Virginia, so we tend to focus on the Appalachian and the Blue Ridge Mountains area. And there's a lot of Germanic and Irish people, Scotch-Irish people. And so my mom would say that she thinks that the Bonnie Clabber method, which is literally just raw milk, and I'm super simplifying this, in a jar that you take you remove the air, you fill it all the way up, and then you let it curdle into curds and whey naturally. It's already got all the enzymes. That is what people would have fed themselves and would without, you know, having to worry about it going bad, really. We do that, and we've been practicing that for the past 20 years, roughly. And we also do, in order to keep the farm going and to try to fund future projects, we do pasteurized cheese too, which is good stuff. I love the raw, and I love the pasteurized, but I will always choose raw cheese over pasteurizing because I could explain my opinions about pasteurizing. But I don't know if that's what you're trying to get into right now as much.
Well, it's more like a probiotic as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
What about now when you're not milking, you can also buy curd and or milk from other goat herds as well. You talk a little bit about that.
Well, I will say for sure, I mean, it's just what we need to be thinking of as moving into the future with the illusion of food scarcity. We just need to all work together. So I think this is something we've been talking about. Not every farm is going to be able to grow the goats, produce the milk, process the milk into cheese, process the cheese and wrap it, sell it at the market themselves. It's just kind of a lot. And we do all of those things. But, you know, we're totally open to, and sometimes we need to work with other partners. And that's just a fact that I think people will need to understand as we move forward.
And I think it's important to note that, to go back to the relationship that we have with our animals, they're very much our partners. They're not our slaves. So when we are milking them, when they have kids, we let them drink until they wean off. Some farms, and this is totally what they do, and that's fine, they will remove the baby and bottle feed them with a milk substitute, but we choose to let our babies get the colostrum, the antibodies that they need to get a good start to life. So there's some economic sacrifices that we make that might not make sense to everybody, but I think when you're working so closely with these animals and they become your friends, you need to work in a way like that there's a balance between everything. Especially when you see, because I do a lot of the milking, mixing the feed for the goats, taking them out on walks, pruning for them, all this work into feeding them, and then you're milking them, and you see that milk get made into cheese, sometimes the same day or the next day, and it's this entire like loop, you know, this process that I don't think a lot of people are conscious of today, because you just go to the grocery store and you buy your plastic wrapped cheese. You know, so there's so much energy and love and work put into this cheese. I think it's really worth it for what we're doing.
You are listening to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. Jerome is in the studio with the folks from the Sullivan Pond Family Farm in Virginia.
So you, when they're ready to go out to pasture, you go out there with them sometimes?
Well, they have access to pasture. They can go and come out of their housing as they please. They have, anytime they want to graze, they can do that. We do, if we let them out into the woods, I go with them or someone goes with them to take them on a walk, just because they're going outside of the pasture, just for safety precautions. But they know what they're doing.
And what kind of guard dogs or llamas do you have? Do you have anything that takes care of the goats as well when you're not there? Or?
Yeah, definitely. We have a llama. She does a good job at scaring away people and lots of other things. We have two cattle dogs. They are not allowed in the goat pen. They're more protecting the farm, the chickens, the ducks, anything outside. We are currently trying to find a new livestock guardian. A livestock guardian is just a larger dog that is bred to live with your livestock. They're basically bred and taught to listen to the goats, to obey the goats, to protect them. We had a wonderful one, but she passed away, so we are now looking for a replacement.
Yeah, those dogs are so important to any livestock operation. As far as we're concerned, I mean, we really miss having her around because we get foxes and badgers and skunks and stuff coming in and just kind of bothering us. So that's something I...
Yeah, the dogs are very important. I know that it's in stable settings. They do their job over there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were here, you had a chance to do some worm farming in our greenhouse. And some of those techniques are going to take back and maybe do some soil building and worm farming with all the manure and litter that you have in your stables. And I know that Sustainable Settings does a really good job of doing huge compost piles with the hay and straw that's in their pin where the cows are kind of hanging out until they get milked. You have a similar situation. You have some ideas of what you're going to do now with that material?
Yeah, I mean, getting to work in your greenhouse was always fun, but this time in particular, doing the worm farming was great. I mean, we have all of the materials, but we do so many different things that I've been having a hard time seeing the whole process in my mind. Shanna's been working so hard to mulch our entire. We have probably like a half acre garden plot, and then we also plant stuff all over the property, which is about 9 acres. So it's a small plot, but you can fit so much. So she's been mulching incredibly, like with the hay from the goats and everything. And I think we do have everything we need. I think. What are you thinking?
Yeah, it was definitely inspiring to be at Crimpy and seeing one of Jerome's livelihood projects, because that hits home with us, because we're trying to expand not only with cheese, but to do other things as well. We grow a lot of perennial herbs that we make tea out of. Cole's mother makes goat's milk soap. She makes medicinal salves to sell at the farmer's market. We're trying to expand because, as any small farmer will know, when you have limited hands but a lot of work to do, it's hard to expand into different projects. But we are looking to be more diversified. And being at Crimpy was definitely an inspiration and a motivation, because we have all this amazing goat poop that we can...
We have so much goat poop.
We can turn into worm castings and use as fertilizer. So it's such a pleasure to come back to Crimpy and see what's been going on and be inspired again and take this back to Virginia with us and see what we can do there.
Well, I think that's what we can do in the sort of the wolfing network and to the...
Yeah.
All of these farms, they're really like ecosystems. And one of the... things that we can do is open ourselves up to other farmers in different regions. And so you sort of had a working vacation. You got a chance to come out here. You shoveled snow this morning and did firewood. And
still wearing her dirty clothes.
Barely out off the mountain because of, Stephanie couldn't make it today, but she'll do the intro. But she's stuck up on the hill somewhere at a hut, on a hut trip. So it's a... We're back in the snow country when you... well, I'll be going off to the Eco Farm Conference when this airs and touring a bunch of farms in Northern California and Berkeley and then down in Monterey and just sort of taking a little break from the snow. We just had a really nice warm spell that makes it all really nice for the climate battery. Can heat the greenhouse without any additional. But today we started a fire and have a sauna tonight. And
we're gonna miss the sauna.
So what could you, if somebody's interested out there, when some of our listeners are interested in doing, taking on goats as one of their livestock, what recommendations would you have them have for them?
I can answer this from firsthand experience. I've been at Sullivan's Pond Farm now for almost 2 years, and I still don't feel like I know nearly as much as I can know about goats, even though I work with them every day. My advice would be go apprentice at a goat dairy. Go see what it's really like. You know, we have this tendency to romanticize farming, and I'm not going to lie, like, farming is really fun and beautiful, but it's a lot of hard work, and goats, they are... finicky creatures.
My parents say that they're destructionists instead of...
Yeah.
If you start building something for them, all they really want to do is tear it apart and just kind of dismantle it.
I think one of the best things to do is go get your hands dirty. Go see what those goats are about. They're amazing, beautiful creatures, but they are a handful. And I think, you know, starting a dairy is very, you know, it's a lot of work. But if you can see, like, us coming to Crimpy to see what Jerome is doing, we're getting an idea of what we could possibly do in the future. So I think if anyone out there has plans that want to go into cheese making or want to go into goats, try to get a firsthand experience. I think you're going to learn the most through that experience.
Yeah, and definitely check out our website online, and you can for sure look at pictures and things like that, and you're welcome to email us. It's sullivanspond.com, and it's just look up Sullivan's Pond Farm if you like Tutu. My parents are Rona Sullivan and Tim Sullivan, and both of them have so much knowledge. So feel free to contact us, and if you're interested in internships and things like that, we're doing all that kinds of stuff, and we're having lots of fun projects going on at the farm too.
And you can check out our Facebook page, which is Sullivan's Pond Farm, which will be really fun to see in the next 2 months, because that's when the goats will be kidding, and we'll have
boy.
Lots of good videos of babies.
Well, it's all part of this local food revolution that we've been hearing about, and Michael Bromley's. We were on his podcast the other night and got a chance to hear a bunch of other things that are going on in Colorado about the Green School, which is interesting. The Seed School, the Green School, lots of small projects where people are getting interested in new crops. And if you don't have something like that, like a podcast or a woofing organization where people can actually go on, you know, on the farm and get some really hands-on experience. Mm. I think we're really lucky to have that organization, Wolfing, and I mean, we get such great volunteers at our place, and we have Teresa and Vanessa now, and we have other people coming in to maybe take over some of our composting livelihoods coming up this spring, and we're hoping to take over a couple of orchards and Peonia to glean the fruit that's not being used there and do some value added and tie that into our agroforestry school. So people will take an existing orchard and we'll see how we can tweak that into an agroforestry farm, which would be more diverse and more resilient and using all of the products that are coming out of that farm and using them and value adding them, drying them, preserving them. And so we're excited about that. And it's been a pretty easy winter so far. I think we're almost getting into zone 7 where I live, because we still haven't had 10 below. And I think we only had 7 below once and 3 below once. And depending on what the winter is going to be, that almost pushes us into zone 7.
That's pretty close to our zone, actually, which is in the Tidewater area.
Yes, we're at 7,200 feet. Go figure. That's pretty amazing how that. Well, it sure is good to have you folks here. You can always come back, and if I'm down in Virginia, I actually was planning to come by, but at some point I'll be making some trips down there, and we can go from there. So
definitely.
Thanks a lot for coming. When you just tell us your website again.
Yeah, it's www.sullivanspond.com.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to get a hold of us at Crimpy, it's Jerome@crmpi.org for all of our programs coming up this summer and volunteering this winter as well. 970-927-4158 is our telephone number. And we'll see you next month.
Music for today's show was provided by our guest, Cole Sullivan. You can find more from Cole at colesullivan.bandcamp.com. Thank you for listening to The Living Permaculture Show, every fourth Wednesday of the month at 4:30 on Public Radio KDNK.
If music is my wife, oh, and you are my mistress, well, who am I to define love? And if the movement of my feet only pushes the pedals, well, how many miles have I gone? If my